Well, it's certainly one of the issues that you have, is one of your favorite topics, is junk food in the schools, and the fact that that kids are being faced with a whole lot of choices that are basically bad ones. Junk food, in the schools.
It is, when you get elected to a school board, you realize that other than parents, you're really the only body in society looking after the health of children. That every day, for most of the year, families and children are coming into schools, and through that you learn two things. One is that a lot of children don't have access to food really at all. I mean, that some of the only meals that they're eating are in schools. In Vancouver that's 15%, in other jurisdictions that may be 5 or 10, but it's still too many kids that are going without good food. But on top of that, you find out that a lot of the other kids, I mean, from sort of lower middle class all the way up to upper middle class, they don't have access to good food. So they're coming to school with lunches that have chalk laden with trans fats and high fructose corn syrup, because that's the kind of, fruit roll-ups or Rice Krispie squares or whatever it is that parents put in their lunch boxes. And at the same time, school boards were funding the education system, at least in part. Part of the shortfall has been made up with kids being taxed through junk food. We have vending machines. We've got Kentucky Fried Chicken days. We've got McDonald's days. Ronald McDonald himself apparently shows up to provide nutrition advice to some kids in some of our schools. And this is really disturbing. I mean, you have social factors where oftentimes now two parents are working, so kids are eating at schools, and we have a very big obligation to feed them properly when they're at school. Even if they're not eating at school, we have the opportunity to give them nutritional advice, which is completely undermined by feeding them or making available to them any kind of junk food within the school. It would be like selling cigarettes. I mean, there's no way that you can justify selling junk food and say that it's wrong to sell cigarettes, because they really are the same thing in terms of the long-term health impacts that they're going to have on children. Certainly in the U.S. we've seen an obesity epidemic where deaths from obesity are now overtaken deaths from smoking, which is an incredible statistic to imagine is happening. And in Canada, we're not far behind them. So yeah, no, junk food is an issue I'm very passionate about. And certainly, my own daughter from time to time has a lollipop or a stick of gum, but to have a publicly funded institution that's there to provide for the long-term benefit of children, feeding them junk food, hoping that they'll buy it so that they'll get another $20,000 a year to pay for sports jerseys and different athletics, is it's something we have to stop and question. What's going wrong in our school systems, and how can we fix it?
Mm-hmm. The question just occurred to me. I don't know the answer, but as you say, obesity now has taken over. There are more people in the world who are malnourished from having too much of the wrong kinds of food as from having not enough food. With pesticides accumulate in fat, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
With obesity increasing like that, then it's logical that more and more of the pesticides would stay within the system, within the fat that is increasing in the kids' bodies, particularly where they're most susceptible, I would think.
Well, certainly things like PCBs and whatnot accumulate in body fat, and that would their levels would rise. But I think what all of this does is it emphasizes once again that there's a need for us to look individually at all of the choices that we can make, both in terms of what we buy to eat and where we buy it, the pesticides that we use or don't use, and also the need to enact at all of these levels. And, the school board would not normally be one that we would think of, but it's become increasingly on the front line of how we deal with many of these issues because of involving children and a lot of choices that people are having to make that they shouldn't have to make. One of the other things that I think has begun to change, or at least I hope it has, and maybe Larry, you can fill me in on this, is the whole issue of the Pesticide Management Regulatory Agency, Pest Management Regulatory Agency that governs pesticides. Is it beginning to change and react to some of the consumer issues that are being raised, to some of the concerns that are being raised in the community?
I'd say yes and no. The PMRA is the abbreviation for that agency that Sean just mentioned. It's a federal agency that governs pesticide use in Canada, labeling and disclosure laws. Pesticides in Canada, as we said earlier, aren't fully labeled, or all of the ingredients aren't fully disclosed, but just recently the PMRA has agreed to change its regulation to harmonize it with an international agreement that we actually were instrumental in developing. that would require them to disclose all of the hazardous ingredients and pesticides that are used in this country. Now, those requirements would extend certainly to workplaces and data sheets, chemical data sheets and labels in workplaces. They still, you know, that it still doesn't extend to the consumer. If you're a consumer and you walk into a supermarket and you say, well, what's on this banana? And even if you're lucky enough to find out what's on the banana, can I get a data sheet on that? The answer is no. I mean, the retailer has no obligation. The supplier of the banana has no obligation. The pesticide could very well, if we're talking about bananas, be one that has been banned in Canada and the United States for a decade because of its extreme toxicity and reproductive toxicity. But it's not banned in Latin America, and it's sprayed there where they're grown, and then we import it back here. So that's why I said yes and no.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we're still producing some of the chemicals that we are not allowed to use here and export to countries from which we buy food. You know, quite amazing.
It is amazing.
Yes.
And I think that that really brings us back to, you know, the place where we started, where we, there are a whole complexity of issues to do with food, to do with pesticides that come on our food, to do with how we deal with those pesticides in the community and how we deal with them legislatively. And as I say, it focuses on those two issues, what we can do as individuals to try and affect the choices that we have, and also to try and bring about some change at policy level, at all levels of government, so that it creates a safer food supply, a safer community for pesticide use, and a safer school, particularly, and for our kids. And I think those are the two issues as we see it, the individual level and the community.
Just one point, I'll just throw it in. I mean, we had that discussion about, you know, it's true, people could afford to buy more organic food, certainly, and it would be much healthier for them. And there are many people who say, well, I just can't afford it, but maybe spending money on junk food and wasting it. I'm sure there are many people that aren't spending the money on junk food that truly can't find it very difficult to budget for organic produce or fruit that is often marketed at a higher price. And I think the answer to that is for more and more people to insist that where they shop, there is the availability of more organic fruit and produce. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, as you build that market, it will become this healthier food is going to be able to be produced at a lower price, a lower cost. So it's in some ways it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If no one is demanding that we have supplied to us at reasonable cost organic fruit and vegetables, for example, the market won't grow, and it will continue to be expensive, or more expensive than some of this other material that we are, you know, purchasing. And I really think it's necessary that we address that as a part of social policy, as public mm-hmm. policy. I mean, if the public says, look, we don't want to have all these pesticides on our food, we insist that some of these subsidies, the agricultural subsidies that Herb talked about earlier, be directed towards local and community farming and organic farming, then we might get somewhere. But right now that hasn't been on the public's, I mean, the public is concerned, but the people are really confused. So, well, what can I do about it? And I think we need to work more on the practical political activities that people can involve themselves in on that issue.
Well, I guess, Herb, that would be your issue. Essentially, food policy is very much an integral part of this whole process. You need a food policy in order to get these decisions made and the choice made available to consumers.
Right. It's quite amazing that at all levels of government, food is not seen as a primary, integral environmental issue, health mm-hmm. issue, social justice issue. And that's probably part of it, because it covers just about any human endeavor, and so it's easier to ignore.
The thing that strikes me is I'm involved in some other activities on cancer prevention, and one of them is the Canadian Strategy for Cancer Control, and it's an amalgamation of a lot of important organizations and federal government departments. And one of their focus groups is nutrition, where a lot of effort is being made towards trying to convince people that you eat more fruits and vegetables, this in itself will help prevent cancer. And that's true. But when we raise the issue, yes, but not necessarily if the fruit and vegetables is laced with the pesticide that in itself can cause cancer, and you have to address the two at the same time, there's a great resistance to do that at all sorts of levels, even amongst activists in the area of food nutrition. You don't see a lot of them standing up and saying, yeah, it's good to eat colorful fruits because of the antioxidants, and this can prevent certain types of cancers. Say at the same time, but you should make sure those fruits aren't laced with pesticides, right, which cause cancer. You never hear that second part of the sentence. Right. And we need to hear that.
It's also similar with the medical establishment just looking at different parts of the body. We don't hear that, you know, the food relates to cancer and the pesticides relate to cancer or prevention of it. But it's also heart disease and degenerative diseases and you know, all sorts of problems that are increasing in society. And those groups are not getting together either and saying that it's a cancer problem, but it's also all of these other health problems, and let's get together and push for solutions on those levels.
I think one of the things that's really exciting for me is that when I talk to high school students in our system, they are where we're at as a baseline. They have they imagine that this is the beginning, and from there they're going to move on and push for better public policy, which is really neat to think about. That, you know, that this, although it feels like sort of we've been in it for a long haul as activists and as people fighting for public policy, that generation out there, they do not question that there is a need for changes to the way that we're approaching environmental issues, including pesticides. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it's doubly important. Out of the States, there's some fantastic success stories around, you know, kids in Compton. I talked to a food policy activist from Compton in Los Angeles, and they left a tomato out on a balcony for 3 weeks. They went to the local Target. The nearest organic food store to Compton is about 35 miles away. They drove out there to figure out how long it would take. They left a tomato from their local supermarket on the balcony. It lasted for 3 weeks before, and Los Angeles is a hot environment. So 3 weeks before it biodegraded, and they used that. They had a camera on it and used it to go to city council and said, we need a garden in this area. We need it for the kids, and we need them to see what growing things look like. And the statistics coming out of that one project around the decrease in gang-related violence among those kids, the decrease in behavioral problems at school. In Berkeley, we've seen phenomenal things with the Berkeley Unified School District and the farm-to-schools program, the edible schoolyard. Simple things like taking kids, bringing a farmer into a school if we don't have the money to get the kids out to the farms, and giving them a taste of different kinds of vegetables, fresh vegetables, and those kids will go back and they will lobby their parents for those vegetables. And for many of them, I met a child at one of our inner city schools who'd never had a strawberry. We were halfway at a salad bar, and he said, wow, what's that? I was going, you know, this is where we can really create change and make that work. And I know locally the local farmers market people have been giving vouchers to inner city schools so that the parents can go to the markets and be able to pick up some organic food for their families. And that's where change will happen among the population, and make sure that these ideas are there to stay.
Okay, I think that brings us back to where we began, and that is essentially that the food that we eat is something that we have to be concerned about and want to be concerned about, and there are certainly things that we can do to change that, both at an individual level and at the policy level. We certainly discussed a lot of those issues here today, and I hope you've got some answers to them. And one of the things that you can do is look at our consumer guide, which has got a whole lot of issues there to do with both pesticides and food, and a lot of suggestions as to courses of action that you can take, including trying to get some change at the government level.